We're live.
So, this is my first meeting, so I don't mind being corrected. Fawn, correct me, we'll call the meeting to order. 5:31, Monday, April 22nd, the audit committee. Do we go right into approving the minutes?
You can, sometimes they do roll, but...
Oh, roll call.
Joseph Maloney.
Joseph Maloney, present.
Lynn Archer.
Here.
Rich Gerentine.
Here.
Herb Litz.
Here.
And Hector Rodriguez is running late. Hopefully he'll be here in a minute.
And of course, Alicia's.
Alicia DeMarco. Comptroller's office. Let's approve the minutes. October 16th.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
No.
We learned that lesson.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, we only have four people in Ways and Means Board voting members, and there was one thing that I did not vote yes on, but there was no question of opposed, so I told them at the end of the meeting, and it was a scramble.
I see how you blamed me for that one.
Well, actually, I have a comment that you should be taking
votes yes or no. Well, I am now. Okay. That's exactly what I do now.
So, the first audit meeting of 2019, I thought we should go through the Drescher Malecki, the recommendations from their, what is the technical term? From their management letter. We don't have to agree with everything they've suggested that we act on, and certainly in the way they act on it. So that's what I thought. I kind of went through all their recommendations. Hector Rodriguez is here. see, kind of open it up, have a discussion on each one, where we're at, whether they've been acted on or not, the ones that haven't, if our goal is to act on them. Some of them are procedures that Drescher and Malecki is suggesting that we turn into policy. If we decide that we want to, that becomes a goal, and then we'll talk about over the next couple of months how we get it from A to B, the logistics of turning that procedure into policy. So one of the first things that they mentioned was revenue recognition. I sent out emails to Bert and Joe DeLeon from IS and obviously finance. They both did get back to me. The revenue recognition, which we all know is pretty straightforward. Bert informed me that we use GAAP, which is what government, what's government, the...
I think practice. Yeah, and I think what he put is GASB. I mean, it's basically the generally accepted, you know, what everybody's using.
Sure. What Drescher and Malecki is suggesting is that we take that procedure and we turn it into policy. Procedure can be deviated from policy, technically cannot, which is why I think it's kind of important. Once we approve a department head, we don't have a lot of say anymore. We do have say over policy. So it's a way to keep some involvement and say in things legislatively that I think post-charter would be a good thing.
So, because I had a conversation with Bert on this. These are the things that the auditors identified as not having a policy in place. While they may have a practice in the department, is there a reason why we've not done this? Because this were the same things that came out in the prior management letter, correct?
Yes.
2017.
This 16 and I think from 15 to 18 at least revenue recognition was mentioned.
And I'm just trying to understand. You know, why hadn't it been done before?
Because they do it automatically, and they just accept that they're doing it automatically.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they accepted procedure on how to do that, and we assume that they're going to do it that way, and that's the way they've been doing it.
But they're basically talking about the 60-day cutoff to revenue being included in which budget, past or present or future.
That's what this is.
However you want to look at it. Is there examples in this county? I wouldn't know. Would anybody know? Hector?
I'm not giving you an example, but to Rich's point, whereas I agree, ultimately the legislature just gave sort of free rein with regards to the area. We're clearly going to be going through a transition soon, and so it may really make sense to finally codify these things where, I mean, just quite candidly, you don't know what the next person is going to be like.
What other method can you use in order to maintain that? Part of it came up, but there were issues in the past,
and not necessarily intentional issues, but we tend to use the 60-day cutoff for tax revenues. But in other revenues, we didn't have any cutoff. So basically, it was like any time you received revenue from the prior year, we recorded it in the prior year. And based on what the accounting principles are, you know, Dresher Malecki says that's not, you know, what they're auditing against. I think the Department of Finance has adjusted their procedures to reflect what Dresher Malecki have suggested, and they're now working within that 60-day cutoff. So I think at this point, it's really like Hector said, it's just like they want to see it as a policy and just, you know,
memorialized. Do you know when they changed to meet that 60 days? Was it within the last year?
I would say, again, it's difficult with these letters because, like, this is the letter that's looking at 17 financials. By the time we look at it, we're so far beyond. I know in 14 there was issues with revenues that were outside of that 60-day cutoff. The 15 letter, I think, just focused on it being policy, and I didn't see there any mention of any issues with cutoff testing. So I think it was really, as far as I can tell, 14 was the issue, and as far as I can see.
So it was an issue, but there's still, every year they continually recommend that we put a policy in
that
place
now we,
around.
Yes, but okay. I think that the Department of Finance procedures, I think, have been adjusted to reflect that change.
But
May I make a suggestion? That why don't we deal with the things that are problems for us? I mean, they go through this process. I don't think we have a problem with this, especially if they address the 60-day. I mean, let's deal with the problems that we have, that we want recognized or changed in some way, instead of just going over every little thing that, you know, we should be doing this, don't do this. I mean, if they're doing it, okay, let's assume that they're going to continue to do it. I mean, I don't know what other way they can go about doing this, you know, the accounting of all this.
Well, I think they could actually not, I think they could take revenue, technically, since it's not a policy, they technically could take revenue.
So they have a policy themselves that they're going to take.
They have a procedure.
Or a procedure that they're going to follow. So this is the procedure they're going to follow. Let them follow it and move forward. I mean, let's deal with issues. I mean, let's not deal with things that are not an issue. I mean, we have an issue. We have a problem with the issue. I mean, I'm not aware of the problem there.
I don't know. I think this bullet list is
policy. One sec. Go ahead.
Thank you. Because, you know, because Rich, you know, you of all people, recognizing the history of this county, when we don't go and codify these things, you end up with problems, and you end up with significant problems. Now, mind you, thankfully, because this county went through such a terrible time in the early portion of this century, that we now actually put things into place to actually go and prevent fraud, waste, you know, problems with budgeting, problems with understanding revenue and when it comes in. You know, as you just said, this actually shouldn't be that hard, so let's get it out of the way. Since it's so easy, Rich, let's just address it head on, boom, and actually be productive tonight.
Why don't we have them, the finance, submit to us their current procedure, and then we can review it and maybe institute it as a policy.
That's kind of how I felt. The in Bert, did I forward out his response? Did I ever give them to you?
I don't.
Okay, I have. I'll forward Bert's responses with revenue recognition. He basically just told me that we use government acceptable accounting principles, GAAP, which I think is a pretty standard thing
it's what they're auditing against, you know.
And which I think is more or less what the auditors are looking for.
Yes.
And so what we're talking about is whether we memorialize it as a policy. But I think we more or less have, this would not be one. There are things on here that we're going to have to talk to different departments about as far as getting what their procedure actually is, because they don't even technically have a set in stone procedure they're working off of. Like they do
the recovery plan.
Let me check with Bert, but I think this is just a matter of taking what he's already taken from GAP and making it a policy, which is what we're being asked to do by Drescher and Malecki, or suggested.
Simple enough.
All right.
Easy.
So I'll send that off to Bert, and maybe by the next meeting we'll have this ready to simply make a policy.
Can I suggest that when we get it from Bert, we circulate it so that by the time we come to the next meeting, we're up to speed, not having to regurgitate it at the meeting. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. One of the second things they mentioned was information technology disaster recovery plan. So I requested from Mr. DeLeon what he has on this. I believe this is something that when he came in, I heard him mention that this is something that he's going to be working on. We hired a firm in 2012. I think we paid them just under $40,000 to help us come up with an IT disaster recovery plan. What he sent me is this, and then I did print out the original that we got from the firm, and it's pretty much the same thing, and what he sent me is still in draft form. So this needs to be completed. The research I've done on disaster recovery plans from other counties, I think we need to take this, make sure the numbers, the names in there are up to date. So we need to formalize and finish it. We then need to turn it into policy, communicate it to the department heads, and I believe it probably should be part, and usually is part of supervisor training. We may need certain department heads to keep physical copies in safe places, or something like that, but this is not quite there, and this is something that I think every county in the state should probably have an actual policy on. But it's very, very close. It doesn't look like they've done much on it yet. Hector.
Thank you, because I have not looked through this at all. I will admit, willfully admit my own ignorance, but based off of this, it just says the version 2.0, author Alan M., terms and acronyms formatting. So I'm hopeful.
No, there's things that say error in there. They basically put the county seal onto it, and it still says draft.
And clearly one is thicker than the other, but I am curious as to basically
I went through the first 20 or 30 pages.
What they modified or updated in there. But based off of that change history document.
So this, I don't open up the floor to anybody that wants to have an opinion on this and where we go from here. Hector, Lynn.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the things I think we need to do is actually have Joe come here to actually, I think, sort of walk us through. I could probably make the same discussion point on information technology risk assessment, just so we actually understand where, not only where he's at, because this is currently a draft, but also sort of where we were in 2012. Because if he's basing it off of the 2012 original draft, well, it's 2019. We're already 7 years, you know, technology itself has gone and you know, gone by leaps and bounds, meaning I want to make sure that the pieces of this that are sort of universal obviously make sense to keep in here, but that we're also updating this to kind of go with the, match the times. So we may want to have Joe in here for next meeting.
And I know that, Lynn.
If I'm not mistaken, this is also what was identified as a gap in the Ampner-Eisner, and is part of what I believe Joe is doing as it relates to updating all the policy. He had a draft policy on a number of different levels. We asked him in economic development to go ahead, take the draft, incorporate the recommended changes from the Ampner-Eisner, and give us a redline copy, and we were hoping for that to be done within the next month or so. So, I mean, I think that the same thing should happen
this
here.
We should get
a redline copy of what changes.
Even the cybersecurity, which is cybersecurity policy and the IT risk assessment are both things that Eisner Ampner dealt with and is being dealt with. We fired it off from Ways and Means to Economic Development.
Right.
So this
because
is something
under their
that could be possibly dealt with there, but it's involved. I mean, this needs to be, it's more than a document. There's a logistical aspect where it's going to have to be part of supervisor trainings, and I mean, there's work to be done, and this is
so one is
this is what I was sent as what he's done, and this is what I went and found from that we had paid for, mm-hmm. and it's pretty close, and it's still what he sent me is still in draft form, so we're not there. We don't seem to be close, so this is something that we may have to try to get. I mean, I'm sure he's got a lot to do. It's all about priorities. I think this is something more so than certain things on here that I think should be prioritized.
So one of the things that I whether it's here or in economic development, it is the technology changes so swiftly, and there's so many things that operationally would change with some of this that I really believe we don't have policies in place that are keeping up with the changes in technology. And I think it's important, and I don't believe we have a policy, or we have as a legislative body set a policy for ensuring that we're maintaining. And I think Eisner Ampner came up with some recommendations around how often some of these policies should be looked at. So I'm thinking on this one, you know, whether it comes out of here or comes out of economic development, once we get all that, we should probably have a policy in place that talks about how often things are looked at and updated. Because when they are, when there's a policy, then we know, because we get notes to that effect to the chair of the legislature and the clerk of the legislature, basically saying we've just updated XYZ policy as per.
Have we been talked to legislatively? Is there legislative involvement as the fund appropriating body? I mean, you start thinking worst case scenario and losing everything. Has our department been talked to at all with regards to this?
I
assume every department's going
to
be involved on some level.
I can't speak to that.
Herb, what do you think?
I don't know. I haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
You could probably ask Vicky.
Yeah. Should I sandwich this in with risk assessment and debt management, or cybersecurity, which I did not plan on doing too much with, since it is completely on the economic development agenda now?
I think it's just, I mean, I sit on economic development. I can bring it up with Brian and just say,
I'm on it with you.
Yes, coming out of
Hector,
here.
Three of us are on it.
So I think we can easily do the handoff and just say that's part and parcel of what should
be done. But it needs
to
be, I mean, this is involved. This needs to be followed through on. I mean, it really needs to get into, it needs to be part of the supervisor training.
Part of this is going to be about making sure that we get it on the agenda.
All right, and then send an email back here.
I got my marching orders.
We'll mention
yes,
it in
thank you
business.
Very much.
Well, no, I mean, I didn't mean it that way. But
that's okay.
I mean, at one time, wasn't it under environment?
It followed Bill Figlio for a couple of years, all right? It's just, that's what happened.
But what I'm saying is it seems a little, I agree with Legislator Maloney, it seems a little involved to put on economic development. You already have your hands full.
But it's part of the IT, and the IT department falls under that committee.
So I feel like I can work with Brian on that, and he can keep us up on it. If we feel like it's not being followed through on, we can talk then.
Yeah.
Well, we can make recommendations to him and see that our concerns are being addressed with economic development.
Yeah, I agree.
The next one was construction in progress, and this is the other one that I thought could be pretty clean. I think what Dresher Malecki told us, we have a capital asset policy which should include construction in progress. And so adding a construction in progress to the capital asset policy would be beneficial in their minds. What Bert sent back to me was basically that we could add the CWIP, the work in progress that they already track, to our capital asset policy.
So probably.
But compared to other counties do include that the same way that they're asking us.
So he gave you language to include?
Basically, he's saying take what they already do. They already, with the capital asset policies adopted by the legislature could be amended to include CWIP. Herb, you could probably help us on this. As an additional asset category with the procedures above formatted for consistency in the policies document.
We used to get a report on like an 8.5 by 14 sheet of paper that listed all the contracts that the county had in progress and, you know, what, how much money was spent at that point in time.
That was pre-charter, or
no?
It Amber's doing that report now, and what she's doing is monthly. If we pass legislation that is another part of a capital project, she updates that spreadsheet and she sends it around to all legislators.
Were they aware of that when they did their audit?
She just started that this year.
2017.
This is like a similar issue, I think, to the revenue recognition.
We may have semi-corrected that issue. We should probably talk to Amber and.
I think the issue was they weren't removing completed projects, is my understanding, based on reviewing the old letters and having conversations with Drescher and Malecki. And I think it was just kind of like a cleaning up the books at the end of the year thing. I think they've amended their process and they've now included. Basically, it was that some things were still being reported as in progress when they had been completed and should be moved to being capitalized. And I think it was just like a year-end cleanup type thing. And then there was another year that there were no deletions, which is, again, indicative that there was probably no review done because there's a lot of assets on the
books. But I think Amber's doing it on a monthly basis now.
But does she know when they're closed?
It doesn't address everything, I think.
Well, and how does she know when they're closed, you know? Because, I mean, how would they know?
Well, and part of the issue, because this was kind of tied into the question around unissued debt.
Yes, yep.
And sitting on the books, and yet the project has been done. Now, I know that you may want to put something out there, but it was never issued. So they never used the bond that we approved. They never drew it down, whatever the term is.
Well, I was going to say, because, I mean, we all know how they go. They just put the stuff out there to the marketplace. It's not like there's no specific bond for, like, you know, the family court, you know what I mean? It's not like, I mean, it's all part of a general bond that goes out for construction.
But when you guys approve them, it's for the specified purpose.
No, agreed, but I'm just saying, even in terms of how we close, I'm saying, so in terms of unissued debt, right, I mean, ultimately, okay.
But the project's supposedly done, it's still sitting on the books as unissued debt.
Sure, and it's more a matter of cleanup than it is necessarily in terms of they're not going to go and basically sneak in. Well, I hope not at least, you know, sneak in just because they have extra debt.
Well, they can't. We do check for that, and I think it is, again, it's like a cleanup type issue.
Yeah.
A lot of people allow it to lapse. I think the authorizations last 10 years without any other stipulations put on them, and it's an issue I think a lot of people face. It's about cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. Having a really hard time determining if it has any effect on the bond rating, and I can't get anybody to give me a clear answer.
I've seen both. I'm sorry.
I'm not even sure on each other.
But because the why. No, sure, but it's the why.
They look
right?
at a
the why don't they sort of clean it up, right? Meaning, like, and I'm not trying to say that there's anything nefarious. It could be something as simple as, well, the project's over, so we don't really worry about it because we don't view it as a critical issue. But is there something else there that we're not sort of getting in terms of
impact?
Well, I'm saying, but, you know, we shouldn't be gaining anything with a bond rating. That's exclusively with regards to your ability to pay and your overall financial health and how you go and deliver capital projects.
I wanted to do this for how they address that issue.
Yeah.
I wish he was here to ask him.
He might already address the issue that we're talking
about.
Well,
and my question in terms of the bond rating is that if the people who are doing the bond rating are looking at our outstanding debt and our authorized outstanding debt and they don't have any notes that say, okay, this project didn't cost as much as we thought it was gonna, we're not actually gonna issue any more, and we we invigorate these authorizations, and sometimes ones from 2012, if the project's not finished out, we get new authorizations, we issue new debt. I mean, it's not always clear that those monies aren't going to be used. I think in some cases when they're really old, we can say, yeah, probably it came in under budget. That's good for everybody. I don't know the answer to the bond rating thing. I just wonder if I'm an outside person looking at it and I see that there is $1.2 million, but maybe $500,000 of it are projects we've closed. I don't know what the effect is.
You can't borrow more than what the projects they can pay for.
So let me.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, I just don't know if it looks like we have debt that can be issued. You know,
the thing is, you know, they might already address this issue at all. Let's ask Bert.
Well, Bert is
how they address the issue.
Bert's telling me in an email that they haven't, that they do not have what he's saying we can do and what Drescher and Malecki are suggesting we do by adding a capital project, a construction in progress to our capital asset policy. Herb, do you think it makes sense to do this? Any of the things we've just talked about, do they get fixed with this addition? The same question.
So what we have to look at is the current capital asset policy. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, all we really need to do is get Bert and Amber in the same room and it'll get solved.
And then we would probably have to do it legislatively to add it if they decide to. So can you just... Yeah, let's just ask Amber to ask Bert. I'll give you this, what Bert told me, what he even suggested we could do. And let's come up with the wording on it. It'll knock off another suggestion or something from the management letter and possibly help with some of the things we just heard about.
Amber's been sending me an update every month for Public Works. If you want to take a look at it, that was March's that she got to me for April.
I think she sends it to all
legislators. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what you're looking for, right? It updates each capital project.
Does she remove them?
No. Yes and no, though, because remember, the authorization still is the authorization that we set forth, you know, during the course of the year.
And yeah, the authorization stands until you change it.
Until you say, oh, yeah, it's done.
Right.
Well, I'll send an email out when we talk to Bert and Amber about this as well.
She changes that when you authorize things, but I don't know if she can see when
they're paid.
When they're paid, when they're done. Yeah.
She has access to the New World. Okay. Yeah, she goes into the system, she double checks on both levels. What's been paid out, she verifies that it's properly reflected in the spreadsheet, and then she adds on, here are the new payments that have been authorized for this capital project. So that's what that whole process is. She's staying on top of it. And at some point, you know, the whole point is if we're approving a resolution, we know how much we've already allocated toward that project. So if something's over or whatnot, it will be easily identifiable. Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, alternatively, I have seen some municipalities who leave the authorized and unissued debt in the schedule, but provide a comment box that say the project is completed, but it came in under cost, or whatever reason, there's still an authorization sitting out there. So it's another way to address the issue if it's going to be highlighted by people.
I think that was originally started right around when we adopted the policy that the $50,000 was cumulative and not just a one-shot deal. Mm-hmm. And I think Amber was tasked with the task of keeping track so that
when
we
it
knew
hit 50, yeah.
when it hit $50,000. I think that's how it all started, and then it's morphed into this.
Okay.
All right. Well, that the could potentially
resolution.
Be another...
Pardon me?
The Carl resolution.
Yeah, the Carl.
The next management letter suggestion or recommendation was a debt management policy, which I'm under the impression is also being handled in Ways and Means coming up. And Lynn, you've been on this, right?
Yeah, no, we've been in conversation with Bert about because he said there is a written policy, we just haven't seen it. So he was.
Then how does it exist if it's a...
Well, that's what my question
if
is.
If we're the policy-making body...
Well, no, it's not a policy. It's a procedure, then. Yeah.
Well, sure, but I'm saying, but this is just where we get into...
He said there's a policy he follows. I said, great, can we get
there's
a copy of it?
Procedure, correct.
Follows.
But, and there's I looked at Dutchess County. It's very basic. Some counties go far more in depth. There's different approaches to it. When
can we actually? I mean, can you even just email us which counties so we just know where to look?
All right. Well, I'll put together two or three examples of surrounding counties. Dutchess County. I don't know if
Well, don't restrict yourself just to surrounding counties. I mean, just because you know Albany County could have a fantastic.
All right. I'll get you three or four examples. We'll find three or four.
We could also request it from who they're working with. They work with how many different counties, right?
More than half of New York State counties.
So they should be able to tell us who's got a good death policy.
Or a good example of what
they sent us what they said was the best practice policies.
There's still a lot of different approaches to how to go about formatting your...
I just want to warn you guys, too, in terms of the debt management policy, it's a big topic of conversation because GFOA and everybody wants you to really limit and, like, be very detailed in it, and there are advantages and disadvantages to that, and that's why you see Dutchess County is pretty bare bones because, again, once you adopt it, you got to live by it. And I think some of the stuff that GFOA puts out there, like all of the municipalities are like, it's just unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I appreciate that Dresher Malecki sends it. But again, like the debt management policy in particular, there's a lot of interpretations about how detailed it should be. So I think
we're
going to
really
see
have
a big
massive,
range.
We don't have a, I mean, surprisingly, even with the jail, even with the law enforcement facility,
right.
Like, you know, we don't really have a major debt problem in this county, you know. I mean, it's
no, it's, I don't think you do.
You know, it's pretty manageable on the whole. So it's not as if somehow, you know, you go to Rockland, it's a little bit different, right?
Yeah,
so.
And again, I think this is falls back into that just, you know, memorializing.
Yeah,
and,
no.
You know, I don't think there's any issue with the procedure we follow.
No, I know. I'm just to your point. I mean, I totally get what you're saying about flexibility. That's something that we're always striving for. Yeah. I think on both sides of the house, so to speak. It's also, I just think, overall, it's not as if somehow we don't seem to really have a tendency to ever go spend a lot in terms of capital programs.
Yep.
We just don't. So.
Which is good.
No, but I'm saying, so even if we did restrict ourselves, it's kind of like, okay, fine. I mean, the only problem is maybe if there are sort of those situations where for some unknown, unforeseen reason we needed to go and spend... I don't know. Throw a ridiculous $500 million. I want to see if I can get. Yeah, I got Rich's attention with that number. But if we needed to go and said, what's that?
I've been paying attention.
I know, but now, but that's you looked up then when I said $500 million, right?
Fly it.
Well, worst comes to worst,
we're
going to
build a new county building
for
$500 million right behind there, and we're going to call after you, Rich.
That's okay, thanks.
Rich Guarantee Memorial. Oh, I'm sorry.
Not yet. So. To bring it back around, this is being dealt with technically in ways and means. Maybe send an update on what you have, and I'd love to see this. I mean, maybe we just have to either get the procedure from Bert or maybe start from scratch if he's not able to get us one, because that may mean there really is no procedure. Go ahead, bud.
But this is like actually the one of the things where actually I argue this does sort of fall, I mean, as much as it falls on the technical side, it also does actually really fall from a policy side, mm-hmm. just in terms of where we're at. So I'm not suggesting, by the way, we need Bert in the discussion, plain and simple. I'm not saying, but I'm saying it's also a thing where we have to do some work on this one, I think. That's all. The other stuff, you know, to a certain degree, we're relying upon staff to basically guide us, right? But on this one, I think we may have to actually put a little elbow grease in.
All right, so get us maybe follow up with Bert, Lynn, and just say
we are in constant conversation.
But I mean, if he had a procedure, it would be like the push of a button.
Yes,
so if we're gonna X this one out here or check this box.
Yeah,
it starts with just that. Otherwise, we're starting from scratch, which may be fine too. What I saw of Dutchess County's, which I feel like we're going to end up with something fairly basic. It doesn't look like it's going to involve a ton of work. We'll look at most of the other counties have one on the books. We could kind of take a look and discuss. But we are going to handle that in ways and means, which most of us in here are on anyways. Even Laura. So we'll be handling this in ways and means for now, and hopefully next year's management letter won't have that.
Software utilization?
I'm going to do succession planning first, and then software utilization is it. So succession planning has been mentioned, I believe, a couple of times as well, and they don't just mean, you know, the exec or the comptroller leaving early. This has to do with department heads, and I think one of the issues that becomes a problem is there's no room for overlap. So if Mike Iapochi suddenly leaves DSS, it would be nice, or tells us he's going to leave or retire, it would be nice to be able to have him stay on for a month or two while his replacement is there. There is no ability to train. In the private sector, you often have high-ranking people with a large staff or a large budget training the people that are training the person that's going to come in. We don't really have that ability, as far as I think that's what they more or less, one of the things they're talking about. There's no financial ability to have any overlap for major positions. I don't know if we have to create a contingent account. Lynn?
Succession planning is really grooming various individuals or individuals beneath the manager, and either in the same department or high potentials across an organization. So somebody is leaving for another job, you're not going to get them to stay here for 2 months. So you have to plan in advance. Should something happen to that person, do we have replacements, and, you know, who are the people, and are we grooming them? So it, what it really is just putting in place a policy that says,
yeah,
you know, there should be a review of key positions in the organization that are technical in nature, that requires people with knowledge to replace the manager. And you and it doesn't have to be every job. It has to be key strategic
I agree.
Jobs in an organization.
I do think that a big part of this is identifying those positions. But I do think there's an aspect of a guy like Mike Iapochi is in all likelihood may be able to give us 2 weeks to a month. And we probably would not, we may not be replacing him with a deputy. We may be replacing him with an outside talent. And we do not have the ability, I don't think, to have two people in that position for any number of days, which I believe some counties do. That could be part of this. If we don't want to do that, we don't have to, but I think it could be part of it.
Well, I mean, I'm less worried about that. I mean, that's almost a function of put a resolution up to go and add an extra whatever amount to whatever line you had to. That I'm not worried about. Where we get into is the heart, I think, of where Lynn has commented on what traditional, and your HR background, that's probably why this is kind of up your alley, but, you know, one of the problems is, you see, in a corporate setting, that makes more sense, where, you know, the VP in this department will become, you know, the president of that division or that company or whatever, right? You know, here, you know, nothing is promised nor guaranteed. On top of that, we're also delving into, God help me, I can't believe I'm going to be the one going saying this, we are beginning to go and delve into administrative, you know, issues, right? You know, we're not going to go and put together a policy that says that the deputy commissioner of social services steps in and becomes the commissioner or gets that job. Yes, you could probably do a thing where during the course of a search, an individual, we could identify one of the, like a deputy within a department, but, you know, it's still going to probably end up still being somebody from that side of the house, so to speak, making that call.
Herb. Okay. On the government side of the house, the private industry is quite different, but on the government side of the house, years ago when money was flush, we had temporary titles, and that would afford you, there's two ways people leave. They either retire or they leave for a better job. If they leave for a better job, it's typically 2 weeks notice, and that's all you get is 2 weeks notice. The retirement system requires 30 days to file your papers, mm-hmm. So you know somebody's leaving maybe months beforehand.
Yep.
They might announce that I'm leaving September such and such, and you can groom a replacement. But you can't pay that replacement. Years ago, you could if you had a temporary title. You could upgrade somebody for a period of time. But if you're bringing somebody in from the outside, there's no way to pay them. There are no titles unless you create a temporary title whereby you can hire somebody for 2 weeks in a temporary title. And then after the person retires or leaves state or the county service, then they move into. And the other thing too is, you know, it's nice to say that we can go do this and do that. A lot of the positions are civil service, and you take an exam for that, so you know who the top three candidates or top eight candidates are. And you're really not going on the outside and saying, God, the best guy who's qualified is this guy. But if you didn't take a civil service exam, you're not hiring him.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know if you want to look at a policy where we afford the departments temporary titles for those specific cases. But most of the time, it's a civil service appointment off a list, and you have no way to pay them or bring them on board until the title is vacated.
Yep.
And sometimes, which makes it even worse, is that person is gone for 4 to 6 weeks before you can clear the title.
Yep.
So not only do you not get the overlap, you have a 4 to 6 or maybe 8 week gap where no one is in the title, and we're just floundering around until the new person comes in and basically trains themselves.
That was a better...
Yeah, but department heads, not all department heads are, that's a different kind of job.
Well, there's management confidential, which is appointed at the pleasure of...
Yeah. At the pleasure of, and all I was suggesting is, I get what you're saying, and that can create complexity, but when you're talking about key high-level positions that have level, that are directing some of these departments, and that's the succession plan I think they're referring to.
Yeah, it is.
It doesn't require giving, you know, saying, okay, you're going to be my successor. It is identifying potential people and giving opportunities either through projects, cross-department opportunities. A mm-hmm. succession plan isn't necessarily a job guarantee for the next promotion. It's really identifying talent and providing opportunities for them to grow in the current job they're in and getting better ideas. So should something happen, these are individuals who you can put into.
I think that's a part of it, but I do think overlap was a part of it.
Thank you.
Could be. It doesn't say it.
Thank you. And this is just where, because again, I'm going to defer to Lynn because she's usually right about these kinds of things. So it's a thing where that still ends up sort of falling from our side. There really isn't much that we can do on this, I think, other than to maybe urge them to be looking at those kinds of things. I don't think we have a problem with rank and file in terms of if employee A, who is in a competitive position, wants to take test B to get position C that is above them. We already know how to do that. Like, that's all, you know, when it comes to what they're talking about here for key positions, you can almost hear them go and say, what happens if Bert leaves?
I'm saying,
that's,
oh, absolutely.
So it's not even Iapochi, although Iapochi probably is one of those key positions as well,
mm-hmm.
but it's a whole thing where it's just like, you know, what's your guy's plan if Bert leaves, right? And yes, there are short term, yes, over the short term, they would probably either appoint one of his staff in a temporary position and where all of them sort of pick up that slack in the interim to an actual real successor sort of being identified. But, you know, but what is sort of, this gets to your point, you know, how do you plan for, I hate saying like that, for Bert to leave, right? How do you plan for that to happen? And so I think that's really where they're getting at. And again, this really falls on them, not on us. So as much as I'm glad that we're talking about it, it's not really relevant for us here at the legislature.
Other than they mentioned proper training, yeah. which I think both scenarios mm-hmm. could deal with. And I think the one I began to speak to, and I think Herb did a good job of laying out, was something that we would have involvement in, because it probably would involve a policy that either allows a temporary position or a contingent account that would allow to have two acting or something like that. So we have to decide whether we want to, maybe this is something to email Drescher and Malecki on and pose those questions to them and ask what have they seen from other counties? What did they suggest? Was this more of an in-house preparation, or was this the ability to have someone when when we had the ability, we had somebody willing to stay, or we knew they were going to be here, but they were retiring, or they were just willing to give us 2 weeks or a month to train their successor, that we would have create the ability legislatively to do that, because now we can't. And then I'll send that out, and we'll find out where to go from there. But the other thing we could do is possibly email each department and ask them for to identify positions that they think should be included in or listed on a succession plan. Like that, we're not going to decide for finance or DSS or even the executive and whatever's under his umbrella or her umbrella, what they think the key positions are that we should be concerned about as a county for someone leaving or abruptly leaving. What do you think of that?
Wouldn't it be advantageous to reach out to personnel? I mean, given that they could put together or have a list of key positions, their civil service, so yeah. That they would know. I mean, you were saying they could step in and spread the work universally. That might be a violation of some of the civil service because they do have a...
Succession planning is really top level.
It's your commissioner level.
Yeah.
Wait, look, this is our auditors, right?
Policy you're putting in without any input from personnel?
Honestly, in terms of how they go about...
harassment.
How they go about... Which that's a whole different issue, right? But when we get into what Drescher Malecki's identifying, that's not. I mean, like, I'm not dismissing your overall point. I'm just saying, in terms of what they're talking about here, in their heads, it's about what happens when you lose
the head of DPW, DSS.
Yeah, and in the short term, I'm gonna stress again, in the short term, meaning like 6 months or something like that, or 3 months. While they're either figuring out
something, you know, some fatality occurs, and that person's not coming back. You never know. I mean, that's the whole point of it's because there's no lead time on something like that unless you're planning it today.
How about they win the lottery instead of just up and quit?
Well, that could be too.
That's nicer. That's a nicer version of that.
They may not stay around though, and they may say goodbye, Charlie.
All right.
Had each department submit their organizational chart, you could probably take a rational view at it and determine what's critical.
We've requested org charts.
That's
an org chart?
That's something in Ways and Means. Well, every other county in New York State just about has an organizational chart online that the taxpayer can look at. I've brought that up in Ways and Means. Oh, but,
Rich and I tried that last year, didn't we, Rich?
Yep.
So
I don't die in office, by the way.
Let's reach out to...
doesn't hurt to ask me.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we can certainly ask for this. I think this is something they should be okay to give us. It might result in something that benefits them. I don't see
reach out to the county executive?
The executive to get their list of what they... I mean, it's probably a list that we could probably come up with, but we might as well.
Why not wait?
It's their umbrella.
Why not wait 90 days and look at it until you get one?
And see what positions they foresee on succession planning, and let's reach out to Drescher Malecki and ask for a more specific example of what they're talking about, and find out whether it's a combination of the two kind of examples that we talked about, or more leaning towards just what Lynn was saying. I did happen to think that they meant that we would have an ability, create an ability when that situation occurs to have two people in the same position, or, you know, a temporary, you know, the person training there, the person that's going to be taking over.
Training someone how to do a day-to-day transaction in a job is very different than developing someone to take over and lead a department. And that is succession planning. It is not something that there's a cause and effect and you have to deal with it. The way in which you deal with it at that level requires thought, advance, preparation, identifying key people that could potentially do that, projects that would help
round out their job experience. It's a whole different animal.
And any examples they can get from other counties that they've worked with, so I'm sure that's what we'll get back, what Lynn is saying.
We do it informally. I apologize for jumping in, but this is... We've been doing it for forever. I mean, insofar as that, you know, you knew whenever Art Smith was going to leave that, you know, that then he would be, you know, he'd be replaced, right, by someone like Bert, right? You know, it becomes a whole thing where... You know, we do it to a certain degree. I get why Drescher Malecki's bringing it up. I don't really necessarily see it so specifically for us as a legislature to go and deal with. Because remember, this is a management letter. It's going to the administration as much as it's going to us.
It's about so setting this a is poly- really more, I differ
disagree,
with you.
I know, but I disagree with you insofar as... No, insofar as while we can encourage them to kind of go and to develop a succession plan... I don't know how you go and tell them, and by succession plan, I mean the grooming aspect of how you're sort of, you know, sort of building up from within for your employee base as opposed to going to the outside. I don't know how in our form of government, ultimately, in which, you know, hire and fire at that level, you know, rests with one individual, plain and simple. I don't know how you go and basically then go and try to say, yeah, well, we're also going to, I mean, not really handcuff you, but to a certain degree, almost handcuff you to a certain degree, insofar as that we're going to really sort of push you to kind of, to basically hire from within, when the authority is completely within one individual to go and bring somebody from the outside if they want to.
Yeah, did anyone else have anything?
I mean, Department of Health, by the way, is a perfect example of that.
They're not suggesting a policy here either. This isn't like a formalized policy either. This is something just kind of a, more of a... procedural type deal that that I think probably we does more or less lie within their wheelhouse. So that may be. So I think maybe we are just trying to help the executive team more than have any real governing ability to do so. The last thing would be software utilization. Two things they mentioned were scanning in journal entry support, which Bert emailed me and said they are now doing. And
I was going to say, we were having problems with this, as I recollect. Huh?
Yeah, but I'll ask
Amber just to double check. I'm pretty sure what we'll find is they are scanning them in. But we'll see if Amber can find anything. Alicia, if you see anything, pass it along.
Yeah, I'll see what I can see on my end.
Bert says that's being done now, and I don't have any reason to think it's not. The other thing they mentioned was Hub, which is a new version of New World that I think is real graphy and has to do with monitoring.
And producing reports and bar charts. And it's really a more user-friendly tool for generating visual presentations.
Are we using that correctly?
Do you know a lot about that coming? I think you had some information that it was coming down the pike, right?
I had, yes. And there had been many a discussion with ACE and looking at what that means and how it, but it's not, I think it's still in development stage with New World.
And I assume ACE will do training when it does roll out. They usually do.
My understanding, it's not available yet.
Yeah, right. I think it comes with the updated version of the software, which we haven't received yet.
Well, what happened is it's a matter of timing, the way this group wasn't ready for this particular item, so they're waiting for the next update so that they can go out and train in one fell swoop. So that while it may be somewhat available, it they're kind of trying to combine it with the next edition so that they're only going out once with training. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the
I'm interested to see it. I'm excited about that.
Did you know anything about that?
No, not at all.
But there's no reason to think that this isn't.
No,
go ahead.
No, I mean, I just want to just, I mean, you know, yeah, theoretically, this sounds fantastic than trying to, you know, navigate through the, you know, wall of text. But, you know, by the same token, it's just like anything else, depends on how we're utilizing it, you know, as an analytics tool. On top of that, is it going to be able to, And you know my various pet issues. It's things like, for example, with this organization, you're dealing with, in certain cases, 3 or 4 fiscal years in which we have to understand when expenditures are actually happening to actually know that this is not uncommon. It's not uncommon to kind of go and see, you know, an uptick in expenditure in May or June for UCAT, knowing full well that it has federal dollars it needs to go and spend down before the new fiscal year sort of kicks in, right? Or that dollars are basically sort of, you know, being spent in the front half of the year, knowing full well the state budget comes online in April 1st, right? And so understanding, I mean, is it that level of detail where it can sort of like begin to sort of almost like overlay the different fiscal years
probably
for a particular
not.
Budget, for a particular problem?
Probably.
We may not be able to use it that well yet, but...
Well, I mean, I think all of us, though, have at least that understanding, so therefore, when you see a year-to-date in a certain department...
I don't think everybody understands that. I do think that it's something...
I think many people do.
Maybe, but I still think that some people are still learning some aspects of that. Yeah. And I think the intent here was just to...
Yeah, no, I was legitimately asking that question
gonna,
just to know
if
we could...
I don't know if it's
going to
do that.
Okay. All right.
The last thing that was mentioned was bank recs, which has to do charter directly to do with the comptroller's office where my wife works. So I'm going to kick this off to Lynn. She can deal with that if she wants to in ways and means where I can abstain or...
I'm sorry, Ms.
Bank recs. I'm not...
Bank reconciliation.
Bank reconciliation. I won't be dealing with that, just to be overly conservative with any kind of... thing with a family member working there.
And I've been going back and forth with Amber.
Amber, we've got and CJ and everybody's in the loop. And files that were being pulled up to kind of finalize some pieces.
We got an update on Friday, and I wanted to see if Amber had been looped in or not, because I couldn't directly tell if she had been
email or not. All right, good.
Just if I may, so I mean, are we just for my own edification? We don't have to talk about this much longer because I think you guys are already on it.
Yeah.
But we recommend the county consider the use of the bank reconciliation module for month end reconciliation and storage of bank reconciliation documentation. Do we actually have that module?
Yes.
Yeah. I just want to make sure.
Is in use. I think at this point, it's like
reconciling.
We need to take it to the finish line.
Yes.
So it's
then,
in process.
And then, then we can talk about next step. You
do
have
a procedure
and then a policy.
But I think what they did, though, they went back to a certain date and they cut off from that date and then move forward now with the new stuff going forward.
We went back and processed all of them in the system just so that they're done in the system. They've been done in paper form too, but I figured it was just a cleaner way to just go back. So we did. We set them up. They're all pretty much ready to go, and we summarized the adjustments. Just so people understand how it works, because everybody might not. We can select items in the system and get it to reconcile, but we can't make entries. So we have to have entries made by finance so that we can actually finish the rec. So we've done as much as we can do. We've summarized the steps that need to be taken by Department of Finance and communicated it to them. So basically, we just keep moving forward, doing them in paper form, getting them as far as they can be in the module. And once those adjustments are made, we will finalize the rest of them. Friday, we got an email that all accounts had been adjusted with the exception of deposit and disbursement.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, deposit and disbursement have the most activity in all the issues anyway. Yeah. But again, it's movement in the right direction. So I had Randy finalize all of those today in the system.
Right. Okay.
So now it's just down to those two major accounts. But that's as far as we've gotten. And I said I wasn't sure if Amber had gotten that update or not. So I wanted to reach out to
her. I'm not sure
if
she did either. She wasn't here on Friday. No, she wasn't here on Friday and she wasn't here today. So
okay. She
probably did not. I spoke to her on Thursday, and as of Thursday, we didn't have an update on it.
Yeah, I'll forward her the email and just
That'd
make sure
great.
That she's been kept
Because
in the loop.
I think the next piece is ensuring everybody agrees on procedures.
Yes.
And then putting the policy in place to solidify this is how we want to operate.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just about who's responsible for what and what the expectation and the timing is.
Right.
And then from there, we should all be able to figure it out, I think.
Cool.
So it'll be clean next year.
There you go.
Well, I hate the very bad news because me and Amber keep saying well, last year already happened. So just so everyone's aware, this letter that you're gonna get in September, we
actually,
can't change.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, everything we're doing right now is actually for 2019
a whole new set of people.
To 2020, really.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, good.
All right, so I guess we're done with that issue completely, right?
Yeah.
So, and since you recused yourself on that, we're all good. So, anything else, Mr. Chairman?
Was there anything else from the management letter that anybody else ever wanted to deal with any of the last couple of years? Those were the points over the last couple of years that I felt were still maybe up in the air that we could have some follow through on. I guess
these are all requirements. So I mean, like it's
the GASBs. The only thing I saw there, and I'm really getting out of my comfort zone, was what 87. There's something coming up in 2020 with leases that seem that might be.
I think that's the big sticking point for most people because it's relevant. The biggest change that requires, you know, the most work. But really, this is about financial statement presentation, and mostly Drescher and Malecki bear the burden of this and applying it to the finance department.
When do they usually come in, and do we meet them?
Usually after April 1st they come in.
I was going to say, like now-ish.
Yeah, probably, I would say middle of April.
Yeah.
Or April.
And they'll just come and like meet with people and again come back. They come back.
Do they come
the year.
To this committee or have any conversations?
What, the Drescher?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they do.
Yeah,
they do. And in fact, actually, that was actually one of the things when we were debating.
They're on a 2-year
about,
contract.
Well, when we were considering changing our auditor, that was actually one of the complaints that we actually had with them, that they were sort of they were not as attentive as they should be, and so they're very much in the showing us the love and giving us the attention that we've requested, Mr. Chair. However, there's one other thing not on the management letter.
So new business.
I'll wait.
New business. Go ahead.
Obviously not for right now, but it's technically that's probably old business. But we had it previously in the audit committee discussed the idea of some targeted specific audits, and again, I'd have to go and check my notes. We may need to actually have Amber go check hers, as well as ask the chair of the legislature to check hers. But with regards to the idea of some programmatic audits, I think the sheriff's department was discussed, and we did something there. But the other thing was Family of Woodstock, and I don't know if we ever actually sort of got to the programmatic level of what we wanted to kind of go and look at there.
No, we did not. We did not.
So, you know, it's one of those things where...
Well, it's going to have to be more specific than the sheriff's office and...
No, I'm saying, I'm saying
go
and double check.
Well, there's some things happening, you know, with the budget from a ways and means perspective.
Sure, but there was things like, for example, the commissary accounts was one of the things I think that was discussed by the chair when she was just a regular member of the board. Deputy chair of this committee, I think.
Well, that kind of leads into something I was going to throw out there, and I think I talked to a lot of you about it already, if not mentioned it to everybody or in meetings where everybody was present. And that's watching from the outside the audit committee. I think that probably Hector and Tracy were probably the most aggressive over the last couple of years trying to come up with specialized audits. I think we set aside $100,000 over the last couple of years each year, and I don't think we successfully used a lot of that.
By the way, that's also that wasn't an aggregate. It's the same 100 that was.
Oh, we just that keep saying it's not getting rolled over. Into the general fund at the end of the year.
Well, no, I mean, it gets dumped in the
and then we just take it back out.
But you could exactly. Well, you can access it.
It's not a cumulative account.
It's not a cumulative account. There's not 200,000. Maybe not seven, three.
So
or four.
One thing I thought, and I'll throw it out there to anybody that hasn't I haven't talked to, is that I thought it was an error. In approach to try to spitfire in here and come up with audits. I thought they should come out of the committees through issues that they came across or problems they had or votes they were making, contracts they were trying to look into. They could send it off to us, a suggestion or a question on an audit. We could then work the logistics of it and send back to that committee. This is the first thing we have to decide is whether it's an internal audit or an outside, you know, or a specialized outside audit. A comprehensive salary study, I don't think we should spend $20,000 or $30,000 to have somebody outside the county do. I think that's something ACE or the comptroller or our budget analyst could do, as an example. So going into the future, we could then, I always use the example, if the health committee decided they wanted to do something like, or they wanted to explore something like Tompkins County has done and allow The towns into their healthcare pool, or Otsego County has created a secondary pool that they oversee for all the towns to create. So they have two pools. They have their county pool and they have their town pools, but they oversee it. That would be probably an outside specialized a firm that does nothing but look into those type of things.
So why don't this committee send a note or send you the, as that's a what chair, I was send a note to all the other standing committees.
Check with you guys on.
And you know, see if they have anything that they're particularly concerned or have an interest in doing a deeper dive.
And then we send back their options. They then vote on it. It's up to Vicki to decide whether we would then vote on it to send it to the floor to approve using those funds for an outside audit. But I think that if we were in here talking about something that another committee came across and felt a need for a look, it would be far better than us kind of going, well, I want to look into the Sheriff's Department or Family of Woodstock. I think we'd probably get some more specialized audits. Okay.
And I don't disagree with that at all for continuity's sake, just because it was the last thing that was discussed within the audit committee. I just want to make sure that we at least had the threads tied off and not just because...
Yeah, I don't know. Were there a number of audits that came out?
No, I mean, there were a lot of different things that came up, but ultimately we sort of came back to sort of those... sort of too, with the idea being that you could do programmatic audits of some of small discrete pieces of those large organizations that we just had various concerns about, or not concerns but questions about. So that's it.
All right. Well, I'll go through everything we talked about today with Fawn, and I'll send everybody an email quickly. Some Ways and Means is handling the debt management policy. Economic Development is going to be handling information technology. There was two things that I think, revenue recognition and the debt management policy being added to the construction process being added to the capital asset policy, could be two things that we could quickly be finalizing and voting on. And then the other things I'll go through and I'll be reporting back on what Amber or Bert or Joe DeLeon or Drescher Malecki get back to us with. Okay. Somebody want to
move to adjourn? Motion for adjournment.
I will second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Adjourned.
It is 6:40.
6:37. Satellite time.